What's going on, Clipper Nation? It's me, William the Opinion Updike, coming at you from Locked On Clippers, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm rolling solo again today. One last cast before the, the prestigious return of Positive Chuck Mockler. So bear with me for one more day. We're going to get through this. We all miss Positive Chuck, but you know, we got to keep things rolling. If you're new to the show, myself and Charles, when he's here, bring you fresh Clippers content 5 days a week. So stay tuned for all things Clippers. Got a heck of a show lined up for you today. It's Wednesday. Every Wednesday, do a what could have been Wednesday here on Locked On Clippers. Basically talk about what could have happened if things would have turned out a little bit differently, a little bit of a revisionist history. So today we got a good one for you. What would have happened if the Clippers would have made the 2015 Western Conference Finals against Golden State, who, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar, ended up winning the title that year, so I'm going to break into that. But off top, somebody brought up a really interesting question on the live stream yesterday. Sorry for not shouting out that person. You know who you are. But they just talked about, the outcomes of this upcoming season for both Terrence Mann, who we just picked up as a rookie out of Florida State, as well as our man Jerome Robinson, who had some, some really nice flourishes last year during the playoffs especially. So I'm gonna kind of be comparing these guys. They're the same age, which somehow passed me by, and they played each other twice the season that Jerome got drafted. So I'm going to talk about a little bit about that. And then going to be wrapping things up with the new daily segment while the NBA is at its slowest time of the year. It's insane how slow it is right now, right? Like, normally there's something going on every single day. I'm attached to my phone every single day. I feel like I might as well be lost on a deserted island. But anyways, that segment is called Shavings. It's kind of where we just open up the kitchen drawer, kick some stuff around, see what's going on. Got some stuff today about Trez's summer kind of workout regimen, how he's looking. And then we're going to talk some more, or I'm going to talk some more about the sort of the comments Steve Ballmer made the other day about being open to essentially changing everything about the Clippers, including the name, which seems to have struck a lot of people by surprise. Got some negative reactions on that. So gonna break that down some more. So all that and more coming up right about now. All right, so yesterday we talked a little bit about the season outcomes for Terrence Mann and Jerome Robinson. I think just in general, my perception is that a lot of people seem to be somewhat down now on the like possible outcome for Jerome Robinson. I couldn't disagree more. I think I've stated this opinion a bunch of times, but to me, he had some really strong performances, especially later in the season. I think that he proved himself as a solid, second backup. He's probably the next up guy off the bench, and he could improve his stock this year in a vacuum. We saw a growth of his defensive tools. The shot, once he got a little bit more comfortable, I personally thought looked really good. Nice high release. He's pretty quick to get the shot off. I think that he struggled a little bit just coming into the pace and physicality of the NBA at the professional level. There was a game, I can't remember if it was during the Warriors, I want to say it was during the Warriors series, but it might have been just slightly before in April, when he had come back off the foot injury and was playing. And post game, his ribs and stuff were all taped up, and he seemed to be in a lot of pain. Charles and I were able to talk to him for a bit. He was all right. It wasn't a major injury. He had just taken a hard screen, and it was one of those things where, you know, it wasn't a dirty play or anything like that. It's just physically it's hard for me to call him a small guard, because he's 6'7", he's a little bit slight, I guess, of build, and he definitely looked, I would say he looked physically like bigger, I guess, than Shea in terms of like a stoutness. But you could, I mean, you can just definitely tell a rookie when they're out there on the court. So I think that that is a big adjustment that he had to make. We've already seen some training picks that he has made that a priority to get that strength and hopefully that speed up to an NBA level. So I think in a vacuum, like without, and I say this because you know some stuff has been said about Terrence Mann, so I've got to address that as well. But coming into the season, I was pretty sure that he would carve out more playing time than he did last year. I think it a little bit remains to be seen, but you know, we saw just so many promising things that I would be pretty surprised if he spent as much time in the G League as he did last season. It would kind of be an utter shock to me. So that being said, at Playbook 4, it's been talked about a lot. Jerry West made some comments about Terrence Mann, just talking about how much he enjoyed him. Both him and Lawrence Frank talked about how much interest they had in Terrence Mann, mentioning that there was a relationship with somebody in the front office going back years, possibly to his teen years. The big takeaway was that Jerry West said that he was going to make a promise that, or prediction rather, not a promise, but a prediction that by the end of the year we would be seeing a lot of Terrence Mann. And, you know, I pondered this yesterday on the live stream, but it was kind of, I do think that it was like a 50-50 mix of both sincerity and also just kind of hyping things up for the ticket holders. I believe it was Miriam Swanson who covered, she talked a little bit about the event, and I believe she used the quote, she said something to the effect on Twitter of the event being really great, but it a little bit boiled down to feeding bacon to like a crowd of hungry pit bulls. And I do agree with this that, you know, like hope is so high and it has every right to be. But I think it's one thing to like get on stage and like hype people up, hype up a crowd of people, like, you know, a rally or something like that. And another thing once the season starts and we really see what's going to happen. So do I think that Jerry West was being hyperbolic? I don't know, maybe a little. I significant playing time to me for Terrence Mann just still seems pretty far away. Just given the amount of difficulty we had working young guards outside of Shea, obviously, into the lineup even last year, I do see that time as being even slimmer. So that being said, I just wanted to take a look at these two guys. So like I said at the top of this thing, pretty similar age. They both started their college season in the 15-16 season. Obviously, Jerome Robinson left Boston College after his junior year, where Terrence Mann did finish his campaign at Florida State. I do think that that's worth noting just because he had that extra year of physical development. They're both the same height, both at 6'7". However, even coming out of college, Terrence Mann has a solid almost 30 pounds on Jerome Robinson's listed weight. So they have Terrence Mann listed. This is all from sportsreference.com, just by the way. So if you have information on the contrary, feel free to let me know. But they have Terrence Mann listed at 215 pounds with Jerome Robinson at 181. And I do think that Jerome Robinson is now probably closer to that 205, maybe 215-ish range, just looking at some offseason training picks, which, you know, we love here at Locked On Clippers. And career-wise, if you're looking at these guys, obviously Jerome saw a lot more run in the starting unit. He was a primary ball handler. And Terrence Mann didn't start any games his freshman season and then would go on to start in the majority of his game of the games that he played for his following three seasons. So looking at the numbers, like just looking at a raw numbers perspective just for their careers, obviously, you could take this with a grain of salt just because Terrence Mann did play the extra year and that will affect things, blah, 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 blah. However, looking at that, Terrence Mann in his 4 years at Florida State averaged 9 points, 5 boards, 2 assists. Pretty solid. Shooting splits, 55, 33, which isn't that great. And then you know the one that makes me cringe is 67% from the free throw line. He did improve on that every single year. In his freshman year, his percentage was really bad. He shot free throws at a 46% clip. However, he did knock them down at nearly 80 in his senior year. So that overall free throw percentage is probably a little bit lower, just taken down by that first, his rookie season there. Whereas Jerome Robinson, so just comparing them by numbers for his career there at Boston College, he averaged 18 points, 4 boards, 3 assists on splits of 45, 38, 76. These are great numbers. So obviously you have to look beyond that. There are other contributing factors, but I do think that Jerome's numbers are impressive, especially just given the team that was around him. I think there's an argument to be made that when you are the primary guy on a team like this, your numbers are going to be bigger because obviously someone has to score the points. Somebody has to be moving the ball. But those shooting splits, that 45, 38, 76, doesn't really lie. I mean, I think that coming in, his biggest hyped skill since, you know, we pretty much had decided at the draft that Che would be the point guard moving forward, kind of moved Jerome into a little bit of an off-ball role. I think that, you know, like most people just talked about the three-point shooting, which we did see was very solid. I am a little curious to see, though, with a little bit of a lapse, not a lapse, but there's a less defined role, I feel like, as the playmaking guard right now. Obviously, you know, Pat Bev will most likely be starting at the point, and, you know, Lou Will is a very solid playmaker. His assist to turnover ratio has gone up every single year. I think we've seen it jump even higher as a Clipper, just, you know, due to the nature of his relationship with Montrezl Harrell, as well as the increased shooting around him. But I do think that there is still an opening for whichever one of these guys is going to be able to establish themselves as more of a primary playmaker. I can't speak to what that will fully look like minutes-wise. But I just want to look at those numbers briefly. So in his senior year, Terrence Mann averaged 3 assists with 2 turnovers, which... not a great ratio, and that's about pretty close to what he did for his career. Whereas Jerome Robinson in the 17-18 campaign averaged 3 assists with, oh wow, about 3 turnovers too. So both these guys, I guess, pretty even in college in terms of that. Obviously, Jerome, Jerome was a bigger offensive weapon, but looking at the confidence of Mann's passing game in the summer league makes me think that of these two, he maybe has the better chance of carving out a role as the playmaker. We'll see. Like, it does remain to be seen. In summer league isn't everything, but just the confidence with which he handles the ball, the confidence with which he finds teammates. You could take that with a grain of salt, considering that it was playing with a teammate in Fiondu, Cavangeli. So that could increase those numbers. But so what I'm interested to talk about now is just these two guys when they played each other. So in the 17-18 campaign, these two played each other twice. There was one game in January where Boston College beat Florida State on Boston College's home court, 75-81. So fairly close game there. And in terms of stats in that game, Terrence Mann led Florida State in scoring with 21 points, 9 boards, 1 assist, 2 steals, and 0 turnovers, which is a thick stat line. For college balling, that's a thick stat line. And then let's look at Jerome for that. He he tied the lead for Boston scoring for Boston College's scoring with Kai Bowman, and he finished that game with 19 points, 3 boards, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 2 turnovers. So in terms of like assist to turnover ratio, obviously Terrence Mann trumped him. Perfect game from perfect passing game that night, but they still didn't end up with the dub. So yeah, that I mean, like, pretty favorable comparison right there. Looking in terms of like their offensive and defensive ratings for this game, Terrence Mann came out with an offensive rating of 124 and a defensive rating of 104, which, all right, so a net plus 20, whereas Jerome Robinson came out with also an offensive rating of 127 and a defensive rating of 105, so still a net plus 22. Really similar players when you're looking at these two. That's why I think this year is going to be so interesting. It's like why I'm dedicating a whole other segment to this. And I want to just, as an asterisk, say, I don't want to sow any sort of discontent. I'm not trying to create any sort of rivalry or competition here, but I do think that there is something to be said about whichever one of these guys is going to have a standout season. It goes without saying, is going to find a lot more playing time. I don't want there to be like competition, and I think that both of these guys are level-headed, team-oriented enough that it's not going to like affect them too much mentally, but you never know. So let's take a look at that second game. Where Boston College played Florida State on Florida State's home ground. Boston College fell in that one 76-85. So larger margin of victory for that game for Florida State. And just looking at that game by the numbers again, so Jerome Robinson in that one had 16 points, 11 boards, 7 assists with 6 turnovers. Wow, he really keeps like a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio throughout college. Which, is somewhat common for a younger guy. So, yeah, not a bad stat line there. One more time, 16, 11, 7, and he added a steal. Whereas Terrence Mann, he was a reserve, actually, in this game. He did not get the start, and he finished with only 9 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 0 turnovers once again. So looking at that assist to turnover ratio, which if you listen to the show, it's like one of my, it's one of the stats I always look at. It's something I'm always very interested in. The decision making, like while the assist number wasn't particularly high, considering Terrence Mann did play 27 minutes, the accuracy of those passes, a little bit leads me to believe that we will see some solid playmaking from Terrence Mann. But once again, we know what Jerome looks like. We know what he looks like with his rookie legs on. When he's getting his sea legs under him in the NBA, we haven't yet seen Terrence Mann at that level. So I do think that like he will have the ability to adjust. I do think that having that extra year under his belt in college is helpful. Just not only from a basketball sense and physically developing, but just your growth as a person as well. I think in that age range, from, let's say, 18 to 26, each year is like pretty monumental growth. So in that right, I'm excited to see what Terrence Mann looks like. If I was to make a guess, I think that Doc is going to roll with the guys that he knows. And depending on what what happens in training camp and what happens in the preseason, I would guess that Jerome is going to be getting some solid minutes. He will at least be in the rotation. He's not going to be getting those type of Sindarius less than 1 minute a game type minutes. And Mann is definitely going to have to work harder to get his way into that lineup, despite, the front office being really enamored with him. So I think that of the two, Terrence Mann probably has more to prove, just because he hasn't played at this level yet. But it's going to be exciting to see which one of these guys ends up being able to take the helm as that sort of secondary playmaker option who can come off and sort of put the ball in the deck, move around to open guys and be a distributor. So That's all I really got from Man vs. Jerome. I shouldn't have titled the segment that. I don't want it to be a competition. But anyways, get at me. What do you think about these two guys, especially as playmakers? Do you think Jerome Robinson could be a better playmaker? Do you think Terrence Mann has the advantage in that area? Let me know what you think. Next up, I'm going to do the Arrowlel Universe, or What Could Have Been Wednesday, where I talk about who and what could have happened if things would have turned out a little bit differently. All right, coming back to the Arrowlel Universe. So we got a What Could Have Been Wednesday today. This is a Positive Chuck special. He sent this one in for me, and it is, what if the Lob City Clippers would have made the Western Conference Finals in 2015 but lost to Golden State, who did ultimately end up winning the championship, as you know, igniting that dynasty that controlled the NBA. So I just want to start with like talking a little bit about the records for the team this year. That year, the Clippers finished third. And obviously the Warriors, you know, finished the regular season, the best team in the Western Conference. And what's interesting why I bring this up is that it's not even close. So the Rockets and the Clippers both had 56 wins, whereas the Golden State Warriors had 67. So an 11-win difference between the second seed and the first seed, which is staggering to me. I do not think you will be seeing any sort of win margin that high in the Western Conference this year. That sort of era, I feel like, is over. So we'll just go real quick through that playoff campaign. Obviously, an incredible first round against San Antonio. One of the worst. I still think that San Antonio, even now, that's like the worst six seed you would ever want to play. That's a team that is built to kind of dethrone you behind, you know, obviously with Popovich at the helm. What a terrifying team to play. I still don't think that has changed. I still think people are sleeping on the Spurs. Anyway, that's the end of my Spurs rant. But Clippers obviously won that one. It's an all-timer in terms of that series. We finally beat San Antonio 4-3. Chris Paul hit a dagger, and then everybody knows what happens next. We went on to face Houston in the semifinals. Blew a hefty lead. Man, that one's really kind of hard for me to talk about. But what could have happened if instead we hadn't blown, I don't know, just pulling some numbers out, maybe we hadn't blown a 3-1 lead, and we had gone on to play Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. I still think that we lose, and Charles kind of even framed it the same way. I think that Golden State was just head and shoulders above everybody that season, and, you know, many seasons to come, especially during the regular season. Yeah, they were just so dominant. I don't see a way in which the Clippers can really stop the Warriors in a Western Conference final. In that scenario, I could see them getting a couple games off them, but I think it would end up being like 4-2, probably. I think that we can maybe sneak two wins off of him, and that's me being positive Chuck on this one. There's no way that defensively we were ever really set up to deal with a team like Golden State. And offensively, you know, like, all right, we did not have that type of firepower. We did not have that type of speed. Especially just, you know, dealing with injuries and guys with kind of nagging stuff throughout the whole kind of postseason. Especially after, I'm assuming in this scenario that the Houston series still goes to seven games. After playing 2 7-game series, you know, we would just, if no one was injured, like significantly injured, as in not in the lineup anymore, I do think that the team is banged up to a point where it gets very hard to keep up with Golden State. You know, their transition game, it, you know, it's widely talked about. We've all seen it. You know how at the flip of a switch, it seems like in the blink of an eye, they can just erase deficits. They can pile on leads. And I think that teams knew less about Golden State at this point. And I could be incorrect, but I think that, you know, watching that team, the dominance was just really pretty clear all the way through the Western Conference. They swept the Pelicans, which, you know, poor Pelicans. They never really got past Golden State, so that's a what could have been for another time. And, you know, they crushed Memphis. So just coming in fresher, I do think that would be a huge disadvantage. But outcome aside, what could have been if we had made it to the Western Conference Finals? Like, does that give enough incentive to try and keep the whole band together? Or does it make you maybe even break apart the team even sooner, just seeing the dominance of Golden State? And then do we end up to the point that we're at right now if the collapse to Houston never happens? So both really pretty interesting things to unpack. I guess I'll just start with the first one. Would we have more incentive to try to keep everyone together because they got close? I think a Western Conference Finals would have been huge for this team, obviously. There's no denying it. I think it would have been huge for the franchise. It would have been huge for Doc. It would have been huge for Chris Paul, especially just given that he was more... kind of the general of this team. And not that he wasn't necessarily in Houston, but I think in the eyes of myself, as, you know, most people in general public, that was Harden's team that he came onto. Whereas this Clippers squad, you know, he was definitely the vocal leader for better or worse for that. So I do think that for his career and legacy, if he had been able to make Western Conference Finals with two different teams, I do feel like people would look a little bit more fondly on his career, which I don't know. I don't think anyone is bagging on him too much. Obviously, the trade to OKC was rough, but I think that it's good for Chris Paul. It's maybe good for Chris Paul more so than it is for this franchise. I think if we were to make a Western Conference Final, there is maybe some more incentive to try to keep everybody together, possibly bang our head into the wall a couple more times. And I do think that ultimately that would have been really negative for the franchise, just because, you know, making a conference final is great. But I think this franchise and organization is at a point where we're looking to win it all. We're looking to get the chip. And I don't think that that ever happens with that team. The Lob City team obviously came close, really great team. I think it's a little unfair to say that they were like perpetual underachievers. The Houston loss is like super unfortunate, but there was no way that we got past Golden State in that Western Conference Finals. And if we did, I don't know that that team could either A, stay healthy, or B, beat the even severely depleted Cavaliers, who, you know, did take the Warriors to six still. So I think that ultimately, yeah, there would be more incentive to try to keep the team together. That's just kind of how things work. I mean, I think we'd be riding off the high of making that Western Conference Final. And so, yeah, why wouldn't you want to? Maybe you can get JJ to sign for a little bit longer for a little bit less money. Maybe you can try to keep everybody happy. Maybe you flip DeAndre Jordan for something. Because I don't know that they would necessarily try to keep the big three intact. I do think they would try to keep the big three intact in terms of Chris Paul, JJ Redick, and Blake Griffin. I think that ultimately it would be a negative for this franchise. I don't think we get to where we are right now. Obviously, there's no chance that we can achieve a rebuild as successful as this one has been without trading away Chris Paul. He agreed to the sign and trade, you know, so that laid the franchise. So just you know, jumping right into that second part of the question, I don't think that we end up at this point if the Clippers do end up making the Western Conference Final. I think that you, in that case, you run into a situation like, I mean, you know, name a team. I guess like the Wizards is one that think that comes to mind, although they, you know, they're not like a conference finals kind of team. The Spurs, I'm hesitant to make a comparison to, because even, you know, even if they're not making the finals, they've been so historically dominant for so long that it's kind of hard to fault. And there is absolutely no way that Clippers team would have been able to have that sort of a run in the Western Conference. You know, love those guys, love everything that they did, but like the game was leaving that crew kind of behind. Things were just evolving pretty quickly. And, you know, having two big men as, like, you know, the kind of cornerstones of your franchise, I don't think would have helped for much longer. Maybe, you know, if they were able to unlock Point Blake or something like that, but I don't think that happens if this team makes the Western Conference Finals. I think if this team makes the Western Conference Finals, Chris Paul is, you know, even more vocal, even more kind of dominating of the ball. And I think that it ultimately, you know, I don't know that getting that whiff of the finals would be that great for the rest of the team, other than Chris Paul, as I mentioned earlier. So, man, sorry to end that on a bummer note. I guess I'm glad we didn't make the Western Conference Finals, just because, you know, everything kind of, a lot of cards had to fall the right way to get to where we are right now, which is a really, really exciting time to be a Clipper fan. So that being said, that does it for this week's What Could Have Been Wednesday. Coming up next, I'm going to jump into some loose ends. All right. So, Trez was at the Rico Hines run at 7 a.m. today. Looking really good. There's some footage of his handles. He's hitting jumpers right around the top of the key, taking shots off the dribble, which you love to see. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and read too much into this, and I'm going to say we're going to see him taking fools off the dribble a lot more now, just maybe running more of like a pick and pop type game. I'm excited for Trez, man. He's just made so many improvements over the last two seasons. Last season, he completely surpassed every sort of notion that I had for him. I was a huge fan of him in the 17-18 season. I thought that he should have been getting starter center minutes. My position on that has wavered recently. I do think that, you know, Trez is awesome and he's great, but he doesn't always line up great against the starting centers. So I think in his role, he's tailor fit for that. But adding a more legit handle just adds another level of dimension, obviously, to that two-man game with him and Lou Will. Being able to take shots off the dribble, you know, we saw him take some heaves and he shot 17% from three last year. I don't even need to see him expand to the three-point line. I think just having even a somewhat reliable jumper is, you know, just adds a little bit more depth. We don't necessarily even need a floor spacer right now. On that second unit, we're pretty shored up. And just depending on how you kind of move some of the pieces around, you know, he I guess he would be the weak man out from the three-point shooter, but you don't need all five guys to be able to make it rain from outside. So just adding a little bit of a jumper to his game, I think, would be super positive. I'm actually more excited about the handle. I think that just adds a dynamicness of play to that pick and roll combination that could just really break down a defense. All right, so what else do we got here in shavings? What's kicking around in this old drawer? So Steve Ballmer talked about being open to changing the logo, the colors, and possibly even the name of the Clippers. And people are pretty against it, which makes a lot of sense, especially if we achieve some sort of massive success or real success just during this run. I can't disagree with Clipper Nation. I would be inclined to strongly agree with keeping the name the same. I talked about this yesterday, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but this franchise has just been through a lot to get to the point where they are today. You know, just Donald Sterling and everything. I think there's been so much of a stigma attached to the Clippers name. You know, it's like a punchline in bad romantic comedies. And you know which ones I'm talking about. So I think to come this far is already a win. And I think that that's legitimacy enough to keep the Clippers name on, to keep it going. And if we were to change the name, you know, it would probably coincide with the new stadium, which opens in 2024. And, you know, that's our championship window that we're looking at, you know. We have 2 to 4 seasons, I would say, with this window. And I would say that almost regardless of what happens with Kawhi and Paul George, even those two guys at the level that they're at right now, you know, 4 years from now, that looks different. You know, it's 5 years from now. That looks different. So I think that, you know, I think that with the success that we have and what these guys can bring to the table, as well as, you know, I said earlier, just everything this franchise has been through, it doesn't make sense to me to change the name. So also, can anyone else name a franchise that's won a championship and then change the name within like the next few years? Get at me on Twitter if you know, at Locked On Clips, at Will Updike, at Charles Mockler. Anyways, I'm anti-changing the name. So that does it for me today, guys. If you're listening, check us out on the Himalaya app. It's a great way to kind of organize your feed, set up the show, listen to us any way you want. You can summit the mountain of pod with the Himalaya app. So tomorrow, Charles will be back. We're going to be doing a Thirsty Thursday show. We've got kind of an interesting setup for you. We're going to be talking goofiest lineups that we can run out. So if you have any ideas for some goofy lineups that you want to toss our way, go ahead and send that to @LockedOnClips, @WillUpdike, @CharlesMockler. As always, thanks for listening. If you're new to the show, please subscribe, leave a rating on iTunes. It really means the world to us. Thank you so much. Thank you everybody who came in yesterday for the live stream. Really appreciate you. And see you tomorrow. Thanks so much.